there has been a second death. Last night I was woken by the most terrible sounds coming from Miss Johnson's room. She had drunk a glass of corrosive acid and died a few hours later. I am certain that she was murdered, because she had suddenly realized how Mrs. Leidner's death had been brought about. But Captain Maitland seems to think otherwise.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot in Agatha Christie's Murder in Mesopotamia, with William Franklin as Dr. Leidner, Richard Todd as Captain Maitland, and Becky Hindley as Amy Leatheren.
So, you don't think, Nurse, that Miss Johnson deliberately administered this stuff to herself?
Certainly not. Who on earth would choose to commit suicide in such a terribly painful way?
Quite right. There are easier ways to kill yourself than pouring acid down your throat.
I agree that it isn't what one would choose. But if anyone were in great distress of mind, and this stuff were easily obtainable, it might be taken for that reason.
Captain Maitland, what makes you think she was in great distress of mind?
Mrs. Mercado says she was quite distraught at dinner last night, and hardly replied to anything that was said to her.
Well, I don't believe it for a moment. I think she was murdered.
And there's something else, something that none of you knows about. It might be of some interest to you, Monsieur Poirot. Huh? We found this in a cupboard in Miss Johnson's room. As you can see, the stone is stained with blood, and there are threads of hair clinging to it.
Oh, God.
Take a look at it, Riley. I'd say there's not much doubt about this being the instrument with which Mrs. Leidner was killed.
But why hide it in such an obvious place?
It wasn't there to begin with. Every room was searched after Mrs. Leidner's death. As to where it came from, it's a grinder. A quern, I think they call them. There's a dozen or more of them up on the roof.
It's the murder weapon, all right. I don't think there's any doubt that this is Mrs. Leidner's hair.
I don't believe it. I simply don't believe it.
I don't know what to believe. There's the French father's disappearance to be cleared up, too. My men are out hunting around in case he's been knocked on the head and chucked into an irrigation ditch.
I have to guess Father Lavigny has already passed the Syrian frontier.
Then we'd better telegraph Deir ez-Zor.
I did so yesterday, warning them to look out for a car with two men in it whose passports will be in the most impeccable order.
You did you? Strikes me, Monsieur Poirot, that you've been keeping quite a lot of things up your sleeve.
No, not really. The truth came to me only this morning when I was watching the sunrise. A very beautiful sunrise.
It was Father Lavigny all the time. He's mad. He thinks women are sinful. He's killing them all. First Mrs. Leidner, then Mrs. Johnson.
For God's sake, control yourself, woman.
I won't stay here a moment longer. I'm going to be the next one. He's going to kill me.
A quick snap across the face of you, please, nurse. Now nobody's going to kill you. Now sit down and behave yourself, woman.
Hello, what on earth's going on?
Nothing you need concern yourself about, Sheila.
Oh, all right, if you say so. I had to go to the post office first thing this morning. There was a telegram for you, Monsieur Poirot, so I brought it along.
Oh, thank you, mademoiselle.
Is that from America?
No, madame. It is from Tunis.
Father Lavigny, I was right.
Do you consider you've definitely got the hang of this business, Poirot?
I believe so, Captain Maitland.
Out with it, ma'am.
Would you be so kind as to summon all the other members of the expedition, Dr. Heidi? Huh? Perhaps the dining room would be the best place.
Oh, the big showdown, eh? I'll go and get them.
And, Mademoiselle Heidi, it is necessary for you to be there, too.
Necessary?
That is the word I used, Mademoiselle.
Very well. Though I can't see what any of it has to do with me.
As we gathered together in the dining room, I felt as if I was seeing everyone for the first time. And for the last. Mr. Mercado was twisting his fingers nervously. His wife was staring at him intently like a tigress waiting to spring. Dr. Leidner looked overwhelmed and crushed by it all. The death of Miss Johnson must have come as a terrible blow to him. Mr. Coleman was looking straight at Poirot. For the first time he didn't have that idiotic grin on his face. Emmett was looking down at his feet. Reiter looked simply bewildered. Miss Riley was looking steadily out of the window as if she wasn't really there. And then I turned to Mr. Carey. He looked so hurt and desperate that I didn't want to meet his eye. I knew that when Mr. Poirot had finished, one of the people in the room would be named as the murderer.
In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate. That is the phrase the Arabs use before setting out on a journey. Eh bien, we too start on a journey. A journey into the strange places of the human soul. And I may say that though I have now arrived at what I believe to be the true solution of the case, I have no material proof of it. I know it is so because it must be so. Because in no other way can every single fact fit into its ordered and recognized place. To my mind, the whole pattern of the case revolved round the personality of Mrs. Leidner. Until I knew exactly what kind of a woman Mrs. Leidner was, I should not be able to know why she was murdered and who murdered her.
I should have thought it was obvious from the start what kind of woman she was.
To you, Mademoiselle Riley, but not to everyone. I began to see her as one of those women who are endowed by nature not only with beauty, but with a kind of calamitous magic which sometimes accompanies beauty. The same phrase occurred independently both to Dr. Riley and to Nurse Leatherman.
La belle dame sans merci.
More than one of you have commented on Mrs. Leiden's need to create drama. Mademoiselle Riley called her a female Iago.
Well, so she was.
Which brings me to the matter of the anonymous letters. Were they written by Mrs. Leidner herself to satisfy this craving? Or were they written, as she herself claimed, by her supposedly dead husband Frederick Bosner, or by his younger brother? And if this was so, was Bosner or his brother a member of the expedition in disguise?
That's impossible. Quite out of the question.
Or were they written by a third person who knew about Mrs. Leidner's past and wanted to frighten her? I decided to keep an open mind on the subject and to concentrate on Mrs. Leidner's entourage. Which of them had the means and the opportunity to commit the murder? On the face of it, anyone might have killed Mrs. Leidner as far as opportunity went, with the exception of three persons. Dr. Leidner, by overwhelming testimony, had never left the roof. Mr. Carey was out at the mound. Mr. Coleman was in Hassaniya.
Quite correct. Full marks.
But two of those alibis, my friends, were not as good as they looked. Was it quite certain that Mr. Carey was out at the dig all the time? And had Mr. Coleman actually been in Hassaniya at the time the murder took place?
What's that supposed to mean?
I also considered one other person who I satisfied myself would be perfectly capable of committing murder. Miss Riley has courage and brains and a certain quality of ruthlessness.
Oh, come on! Just because I didn't conceal my feelings...
When I said to you jokingly that I hoped you had an alibi, you told me a silly and pointless lie. I learned from Miss Johnson that far from playing tennis, as she had said, Miss Riley had actually been only a little way outside this house at the time of the murder.
That doesn't mean I killed her.
No, perhaps not. But will you tell me what you did that afternoon?
I rode out to the dig after lunch. It must have been about 1:45 when I got there.
Did you find any of your friends at the dig?
There seemed to be no one but the Arab foreman.
You did not see Mr. Carey?
No.
Have you any explanation, Mr. Carey?
I went for a walk. There was nothing of interest turning up on the mound.
In which direction did you walk?
Down by the river.
Not back towards the house?
Nope.
I suppose you were waiting for someone who didn't come.
Did you see anything else, mademoiselle?
Yes. I wasn't far from the house when I noticed the expedition truck drawn up in a wadi. I thought it was rather odd. Then I saw Mr. Coleman. He was walking along with his head down as though he was searching for something.
Look here, there's a perfectly simple explanation for what I was doing. I admit it must have looked a bit fishy. I suppose it was, rather. You see, the day before, I'd come across a pretty splendid cylinder seal, and I'd slipped it into my coat pocket instead of putting it in the antica room. And then I discovered that the bally thing must have fallen out of my pocket. So I thought I'd better have a jolly good search on the quiet. I got back from Hassaniya as quickly as I could, and I parked the bus in a wadi where I thought no one would see it while I hunted for the seal. I couldn't find the damn thing, so I drove back to the house, and naturally everyone thought I'd just got back from Hassaniya.
And you did not undeceive them?
Well, that was pretty natural under the circumstances, don't you think?
I hardly agree.
Oh, come now. don't go looking for trouble. That's my motto. But you can't fasten anything on me. I never went into that courtyard, and you won't find anyone who will say I did.
That, of course, has been the difficulty all along. The servants swore that no one entered the courtyard, but what they really meant was that they had seen no stranger. They would scarcely have noticed a member of the expedition. Coleman was expected to return by the station wagon, but they would not have noticed if Mr. Carey had come into the courtyard.
Are you accusing me of murder, Monsieur Poirot?
As yet, I am only taking you on a journey towards the truth. Let us consider the motives of other members of the expedition. Mrs. Mercado, for instance.
But I adore darling Louise. Everyone knows that I love her. Why should I want to kill her?
To protect your husband from exposure, perhaps.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mr. Mercado is a chronic drug addict. Nurse Leatherman and I found out easily enough. Why should not Mrs. Leidner have found out also? It would have suited her peculiar temperament to feel that she knew a secret which she could reveal at any minute with disastrous results. So, there is a possible motive for murder on the part of the Mercados, and both Mrs. Mercado and her husband had the opportunity during that 10 minutes when the courtyard was empty.
But that's not true. What are you suggesting? That my husband is a crazy drug addict who goes around killing people?
It is possible. There have been many cases of murder committed under the influence of drugs. But there is also the possibility that you could have killed Mrs. Leidner to prevent her revealing the secret of your husband's addiction.
But how could I possibly kill her? Do I look like a murderer?
I believe, Mrs. Mercado, that to protect your husband, you would stop at nothing.
It's not possible. It's just not possible.
Then there were the three young men. Of these, the most obvious suspect was Carl Reiter. If by any chance William Bosner was one of the expedition staff, then Reiter was the most likely candidate. But he had motive enough for murder on his own account. Undiscriminating adoration brought out the worst in Mrs. Leidner. She made Reiter's life hell for him. Could she have goaded him to such a degree that he turned on her and killed her? Next, William Coleman. His behavior, as reported by Miss Riley, is certainly suspicious.
But I've already told you.
If he was the criminal, he might have affected his cheerful, rather silly personality to conceal the hidden identity of William Bosner.
Oh, I say.
But I do not think, Mr. Coleman, that you have the temperament of a murderer.
Thanks very much.
Of the three young men, there remains Mr. Emmott. He, again, might be a possible shield for the identity of William Bosner.
Oh, that's just plain stupid. Mr. Emmott wouldn't murder anyone.
Whatever personal reasons he might have for the removal of Mrs. Leidner, I soon realized that I should have no means of learning them from him. He could keep his own counsel remarkably well. Of all the members of the expedition, as far as character and personality were concerned, Mr. Emmott seemed to me the most fitted to commit a clever and well-timed crime. The last two people on my list were Richard Carey and Father Lavigny. Now, according to the testimony of Nurse Leatheron and others, Mr. Carey and Mrs. Leidner barely managed to be civil to one another. But Miss Riley had a totally different theory.
It was perfectly obvious that he was madly in love with her. All that chilly politeness was just a cover-up.
I soon had little doubt that you were correct. I realized that Mr. Carey was very close to a nervous breakdown. A few words of mine were enough to provoke him into a reckless and unguarded outburst.
I said I hated her like hell, and it was true. Every word I said to you was true.
But why did you hate her?
I can't give you a reason.
Ah, but I can, Mr. Carey. You were devoted to Dr. Leidner, and at first you were totally indifferent towards his wife. That did not suit Mrs. Leidner. She set herself out to capture you. And she succeeded, did she not?
Yes, she succeeded.
There is no hatred so great as that of a man who has been made to love a woman against his will. But then, something entirely unforeseen took place. Mrs. Leidner was, as you say, hoist with her own petard. For the first time in her life, She fell in love, really in love, with Richard Carey.
Isn't that what I told you?
All along, I had suspected that the murder of Louise Leidner was a crime passionnel. In Mr. Carey, I had found the ideal protagonist.
Even so, I didn't kill her. I may have wanted to often enough, but I didn't kill her.
Which leaves me with my last candidate, Father Lavigny.
He was a madman. We are lucky he didn't kill us all in our bed.
Silence. My attention was drawn to the good father straight away by a certain discrepancy between his description of the strange man seen peering in at the windows and that given by Nurse Leverin.
He kept on insisting that the man had a squint.
It looked almost as though Father Lavigny was deliberately misleading us, as though he did not want the man caught. And then I realized that the mysterious stranger who seemed to be peeping through Mrs. Leidner's room could equally well be looking through the window by the side of it, that of the Antica room.
And that night somebody broke into the Antica room.
And who did you find there? Father Lavigny. I began to grow curious about this Father Lavigny. Could you tell me, Dr. Leidner, how you first made contact with him?
He was a well-known epigraphist. When it became clear that Dr. Bird would not be able to come on the expedition, I sent a telegram to the Père Blanc at Carthage.
Unfortunately, that telegram was intercepted. Father Lavigny was an imposter. Small wonder that he took so long deciphering the few inscriptions that were found. He was confident that he could bluff his way through. But if he was not Father Lavigny, did that mean that he was Frederick Bosner?
He could have been anybody underneath that beard.
But then I realized that Father Lavigny's interest lay in a very different direction. It was Nurse Leverin who gave me the vital clue.
When I mentioned seeing the wax on the gold cup.
Precisely. At that moment I looked into his eyes, and I knew in a flash. I regret to tell you, Dr. Leidner, that the treasures in your Antica room are not the genuine articles found by your expedition.
What? What are you saying?
They are clever electrotypes substituted by the good father and his accomplice, Ali Yusuf, the mysterious stranger seen by Mrs. Leidner and Nurse Leatherin. Father Lavigny is none other than Raoul Meunier, one of the cleverest art thieves in Europe and well known to the French police.
But those finds were irreplaceable.
The question in my mind was, did Mrs. Leidner discover what he was up to, and was that the reason why she was murdered?
It seems a very likely explanation of the facts.
So it seemed to me, Captain Maitland, until the second murder. It was the death of Miss Johnson which enabled me to solve the mystery. With Nurse Leatherman's assistance, I will explain the facts of the second murder. Nurse, would you be so good as to describe what happened on the night you got back from Hassania?
There was a light in Dr. Leidner's office. I found Miss Johnson sitting at the desk weeping her heart out. I put her to bed and started to clear up her things. There was a scrap of paper that must have fallen out of her pocket. The moment I picked it up, she snatched it away from me and burned it.
But not before you had noticed something about it,
It was the same writing as on the anonymous letters.
And the following day?
I found her all by herself on the roof. She seemed to be in a kind of trance. She said, I've seen how someone could come in from outside and no one would guess.
I went up to the roof and stood where she had stood. Did she mean that a stranger had come in from outside? And was Father Lavigny the person she met? And then Nurse Leatherin told me what Miss Johnson had said before she died.
She said, the window, nurse, the window.
And then I saw what Miss Johnson had seen from the roof. I suggest now that three men had alibis for the time of the crime. Two of those alibis I have shown to be worthless. But then I saw my amazing mistake. The third alibi was worthless too. Not only could Dr. Leidner have committed the murder, but I was convinced that he had committed it.
But Mr. Emmett stated that Dr. Leidner didn't leave the roof until at least 2:45.
Yes.
An hour after the murder was committed.
But Dr. Leidner did not have to leave the roof to murder his wife. That is what Miss Johnson realized. The window, Miss Johnson said. Mrs. Leitner's window was directly underneath the roof, on the side away from the courtyard. And Dr. Leitner was alone up there, with no one to witness his actions, and with the instrument of murder, a heavy stone quern, ready to hand. Once he is certain that Emmott is down in the courtyard, he takes from his pocket the mask, which he has already used to scare his wife, and dangles it over the parapet until it is tapping on his wife's window.
Then it was not a fantasy after all.
Mrs. Leitner hears the noise and sees the mask. But it is broad daylight, and she realizes the trick that has been played on her. She rushes to the window, opens it, and pushes her head through the bars to see who is playing the trick on her. Dr. Leitner is waiting. He has in his hands, poised and ready, the heavy quern. At the psychological moment, he drops it.
And she cried out. That was what Miss Johnson said she heard. But the cry could only have been noticed if the window was open.
Very good, nurse. There was, as you will have observed, Captain Maitland, a hole in the quern through which Dr. Leitner had passed a cord.
So all he had to do was to haul it up again.
And then he put it down among the others where no one would notice it.
So he came down an hour later and pretended to discover his wife's body.
But first he must pull the corpse away from the window to beside the bed. He fastens the window. There is blood on the rug by the window. He moves it to the wash basin so that no one will connect it with the window.
But the man was beside himself with grief. I saw him. He wasn't acting.
Oh, no. He was not acting. For he did love his wife.
But if he loved her, why did he kill her? Where's the motive? Can't you speak, Eric? Tell him he's mad.
Did I not tell you all along that this was a crime passionnel? Why did her first husband, Frederick Bosner, threaten to kill her? Because he loved her. And in the end, you see, he made his boast good. For Dr. Leitner is Frederick Bosner.
Is this another of your little tricks, Poirot? Is this true? Leitner, is it true?
Frederick Bosner loved his wife with an overpowering passion such as only a woman of her kind can evoke.
But she denounced him as a spy. I thought he was supposed to have been shot.
He escaped the firing squad only to be involved in a terrible train crash. He survived that also. But there was a man who did not survive it. A young Swedish archaeologist named Erik Leitner, whose body was so disfigured as to be unrecognizable.
You're saying that Bosner assumed Leidner's identity?
And so it really was Bosner who wrote the letter?
Because she was still the ruling passion of his life, and he was cold-bloodedly determined that she should belong to no other man.
Are you seriously expecting us to believe that when he came back into her life again, she didn't recognize him?
Yes, I am asking you to believe just that. Over 15 years had gone by, remember. Everything about him had changed.
It's not so fantastic. I've known women who wouldn't recognize their husbands after just a couple of years apart.
But why did the letters start again? And what about the gas poisoning business?
I think that Dr. Leitner was taking no chances. He wanted to impress on his wife once and for all that Erik Leitner and Frederick Bosner were different people, but the letters were not enough. He decided to contrive the rather puerile business of the gas poisoning. It was easy enough. All he had to do was to slip out and turn on the taps once he was sure that his wife was soundly asleep. And then, just in time, he makes sure his wife wakes and smells the gas. It was enough to convince her. After that, he was satisfied. No more letters need come.
But they did come. They came to the house.
But by then the situation had changed, my friend. The threat underlying the letters was always a genuine threat. If she belonged to any other man, he would kill her. And she had given herself to Richard Carey.
Oh, my God.
And so, when he discovered this, cold-bloodedly and very calmly, Dr. Leitner prepared the scene for murder. From the very first, there was something which puzzled me. Why did he secure the services of a nurse when a companion would have done?
Yes, it struck me as curious too, but I went along with it.
It was vital that a reliable professional witness should be able to state incontrovertibly that Mrs. Leitner had been dead over an hour when her body was found, that she was killed when everybody could swear that her husband was up on the roof.
You mean he'd worked it all out in that much detail beforehand?
He brooded on it incessantly. That was the origin of the tension and uneasiness in the house that everybody remarked on. It wasn't Mrs. Leitner who was responsible for it. It was an obsessed fanatic planning to kill.
And Miss Johnson realized what was happening when she found one of the threatening letters in Dr. Leidner's office.
She suspected, I think, but her mind refused to admit it. It was not until that moment when you found her on the roof that she realized how the murder had been committed. But even then, her loyalty, her love for Dr. Leidner asserted itself. She looks deliberately in the wrong direction, across the courtyard, and tries to put you off the scent by talking vaguely about how someone could have got in from outside without being recognized.
And it was only at the very last minute that she tried to tell me how it had really happened. The window. Mrs. Leitner had looked out of the window.
And so, everything is explained. Everything falls into place. But there is no proof. No proof at all.
No, there is no proof. But that does not matter. You know that I would not deny truth. I have never denied truth. I think really I'm rather glad that it has all come out. I'm so very tired. I'm sorry about Anne Johnson. That was all bad, senseless. It wasn't me. And she suffered too, poor soul. But it wasn't me, it was fear. You would have made a good archaeologist, Monsieur Poirot. You have a gift for recreating the past. It was all very much as you said. I loved Louise, and I killed her. If you had known Louise, you'd have understood. I think you understand anyway.
It's strange, but in spite of it all, I can't help feeling sorry for him. Must be awful to love somebody as desperately as all that. I shan't be sorry to get away from here.
You have had enough of the mysterious East.
I thought it was going to be like something out of the Arabian Nights, but it's not like that at all. I'm going back to England next week. There's an old lady who doesn't want to make the journey on her own and wants somebody to look after her. What about you?
Oh, I intend to take my time. After so much excitement, I need a little peace and quiet. I shall break my journey home at Istanbul and spend a few days exploring the city. All my life I have wanted to see Santa Sofia. And then I shall treat myself to a sleeping car on the Orient Express. After all, at my age, I deserve these little luxuries.
In the final part of Agatha Christie's Murder in Mesopotamia, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Dr. Leidner by William Franklin. Captain Maitland, Richard Todd. Dr. Riley, Norman Rodway. Sheila Riley, Kathy Serra. Richard Carey, Gavin Muir. Mrs. Mercado, Elaine Claxton. Coleman, David Jarvis. And Amy Leatheran, Becky Hindley. Murder in Mesopotamia was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.